are here at the 2019 California Nevada Credit Union League's REACH conference.
We are.
In beautiful Monterey, California. This place, this is my first time here, and it is amazing. Yeah. Oh my God. I live in San Diego, and I've always flown over it, but never landed
in it. Come to the Central Coast. It's a very beautiful place.
It is, indeed. And do you live where I
am? No. I live in London.
Oh, okay.
Where it's cold and dark and gray and frequently raining.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, so this is quite a privilege.
Yeah, I would stay here for another 2 weeks if I were you. Yeah, indeed. All right, well, forgive me for my manners.
Yeah.
Dr. Louise Beaumont here. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
And you spoke earlier today.
I did.
And the first question here is a doozy. Who are you and why you have an opinion?
Who am I? Why do I have an opinion? Right. Okay, so my name's Louise Beaumont. I do three things in life. I work with legislators and regulators to create disruption.
Okay.
I work with corporates to help them cope with that that disruption.
Mm-hmm.
And I invest in and take board and executive positions with the startups I believe are going to exploit disruption.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a 360 degree view of disruption, from making it happen all the way through to adopting it.
Okay.
And the red thread through all of that is open and accessible data, something I believe we all have a right to.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And you're talking about open banking, open everything basically. But what is that for somebody who might just be just tuning in or just new to this? What does that exactly mean? Open bank, all this open transparency, if you will. What does that mean to folks, especially financial institutions?
Typically, if you're a financial institution and you hear the phrase open banking, you think about regulation. Because what it means is I, as the creator of the data, me, the consumer, the member of the credit union, by my behavior, buying things, moving money into and out of my account, I lay a data trail. Think of it as digital dandruff. And that data is mine.
Right.
I created that data, it's mine. The financial institution might house that data, but it does precious little else with it. Typically hides it, hoards it, and never ever looks at it. Actually, that's my data, and I can now, in our data-enabled world, use that data to access services that actually work for me. So the regulators felt that when financial institutions of all descriptions had failed to take notice of the fact how consumers' attitudes, behaviors, and expectations had shifted exponentially towards service, they'd failed to take account of how data could be leveraged, the powers of technology, and they'd also failed to pay any attention whatsoever to new competitors coming into the space, whether that's the tech titans, news today about Uber and Uber Money, for example. Apple, obviously Amazon, obviously Facebook, and more around the world.
Everything,
Driving innovation in the financial services space, tackling the underserved, whether that's small businesses with Amazon or whether it's people in the gig economy, Uber and more. Then, of course, you've got the challengers, the digital banks, the digital neo-banks. And, of course, you've got those companies which are pure fintechs connecting people, like Plaid, for example, in the US. If you've ignored all of those things, the only lever left is regulation. And regulation is the kind of punishment that you get for not having paid attention to all of the other drivers of change. And it's a blunt instrument. And it very frequently stimulates the anaphylactic shock compliance reaction, which is to slow everything down and to stop that change. And that's a legitimate reaction to regulation. It just doesn't work on any of those other drivers of change.
Right.
And regardless of whether or not you have open banking regulation here in the US, you have open banking. The Financial Data Exchange group has now 54 members. BNY Mellon says very clearly there's more open banking happening in the corporate sector here in the US, particularly around payments, than there is in the Eurozone. And you have organizations like Wells Fargo leveraging Plaid for data to be served to those financial tech businesses out there, which are delivering more hyper-personalized, predictive, and preemptive service
unbelievably so.
To consumers mm-hmm. and small businesses. Mm-hmm. So regardless of whether or not you have the regulation, you most definitely have open banking. There are two places in the world that don't have open banking, the Arctic and the Antarctic. Everywhere else is getting with it. And,
gotcha.
And even if they're not yeah. specifically focused on open banking, the concept of open data is well established. You are as familiar with I am, and indeed everybody in the room that we were speaking to, with the concept that you can use your location to access services mm-hmm. that you might want to access. Mm-hmm. With Uber, you use your location. Mm-hmm. That's a piece of data, my personal data, where I am right now.
Right.
I leverage that to access the service I want from Uber.
Right.
This is no different. So open banking, of course. Open data, yes, mm-hmm. very definitely. In Australia, they're developing consumer data rights, which cover utilities and telco, as well as financial services.
Is it like
services.
A, more of a privacy act there or something? Or
no,
what,
it's about the liberation of your data.
Oh, really?
So that you can use your data to access the services you want.
Okay.
This is not in opposition to those thoughts around privacy,
mm-hmm.
The act that you have here in California, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. or what we have around the rest of the world, consumer, the GDPR, mm-hmm. global data rights. These are not in opposition. These are very harmonious ideas.
Mm-hmm.
One, it's my data, and two, I can use it, and three, I can revoke access to it if I no longer wish you to have access to my data.
Gotcha. Which is empowering to the consumer, for sure.
It certainly is.
Yes.
Because what it says is that consumer can, by the revocation of their data, I can stop your service, and I can stop your revenue stream.
Yeah, that puts, that changes the game altogether.
Absolutely.
Big time, big time. Let's talk about a terminology that I've been hearing in the hallways this morning since your presentation this morning. Data Daisy. What is the Data Daisy? And why does it matter?
So the data daisy is a very, very simple metaphor. Everybody knows what a daisy looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Yellow bit in the middle, mm-hmm. white petals all the way around.
Right.
Well, think of the yellow bit in the middle as your identity.
Okay.
You know, who you are, your
yeah.
digital identity. And every single white petal mm-hmm. is a petal of data.
Mm-hmm.
And you can plug that data in mm-hmm. to access the kind of services that you might want to access.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be the transaction data, your trail, your digital dandruff that you create through your behavior in your current account. It might be your savings account, your loan account, it might be credit cards, it might be your home loan, it might be insurance or pensions, it might be telco consumption, it might be location, mm-hmm. for example. And the more of those petals of data, not only can you plug in, because you're now able to do so,
mm-hmm.
But also that you wish to plug in, that allows you to create around yourself, focused upon you, hyper-personalized, predictive, and preemptive services
mm-hmm.
that get ever more so the longer you're willing to leave those petals of data plugged in, which makes the service that can, as we develop forward into our open future, those services become ever more personalized
mm-hmm.
and, I would argue, pleasurable.
Hmm.
A foreign concept in financial
yes,
services.
Please.
People think that financial services has to hurt. I'm not convinced that's true. I don't believe that in the behavior that we see people adopt in every other aspect of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Service is valued, service is seen as a positive and attractive thing.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, my argument is often that financial services is fundamentally misnamed. It's actually financial products. And in a world where we're really talking about a very luxurious data daisy, we're talking about very hyper-personalized, predictive, and preemptive
mm-hmm,
services.
Mm-hmm.
And if you believe that, then you also believe that it's the death of the big dumb product, mass marketed, without
yeah.
consideration to the end consumer.
Yeah, I agree.
So if you believe that,
mm-hmm.
that has some very real implications for credit unions
mm-hmm.
who may have some very standard products. So one of the things we were talking about earlier in the day was how do credit unions shift their perspective from having a product and serving a segment to understanding individuals as the coalescence of data that they gather mm-hmm. around them that you are privileged to access to power your service to those individual daisies.
This data is creating a whole new mindset
yes.
for credit unions to yes. market to their members.
Yes.
Because it's getting down to the very individual, what does this individual need?
Yeah.
And so that's the beauty of it. But the other side of the coin, though, that I'm seeing is that that's a hard mindset to shift to for a lot of folks right now. I think as time goes on, it'll get easier and easier.
Mm. Well, so, as you start to see others do it, then you've got a race to catch
exactly,
up.
Exactly, yeah.
My argument, though, is that credit unions surely have some very significant advantages.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those come in the shape of certain aspects of trust. I've read a lot of research that tells me consumers, members trust credit unions. I'm not always convinced by the methodology of this research. I think it's quite self-sustaining. These are the answers that you want, and therefore this is what the research
yeah.
shows.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't show you that you're trusted a great deal more than organizations which really aren't trusted at all. So maybe being, you know, having a slight trust advantage at a macro level is not that interesting.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
So one of the pieces of research that a business I invested in and chair called Signoid did was to really get under the skin of what trust means to people today.
Mm-hmm.
And they did the research in the UK and Australia,
mm-hmm.
but critically also here in the US.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was able to share for the first time with people today. And it was novel research because it was undertaken in a brand new way
mm-hmm.
at scale.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very interesting in what it revealed.
Mm-hmm.
So there are, what we did was we asked people, individuals, several thousand of them, how do you feel, what emotions do you feel when you feel trust towards an organization
mm-hmm.
or the services it provides?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Describe that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, what does it feel like when you don't trust an organization, or they lose your trust,
yeah.
or the service, you lose trust in that service. What does that feel like?
Mm-hmm.
We use that language set to unlock publicly available data, whether that was social media, whether that was reviews, publicly available information in the many, many millions of data points. So text and images available online. We synthesize that down, sort of like panning for gold.
Mm-hmm.
To a very tight data set of just under 300,000 data items. And from that, we were able to see very clearly in those patterns of data, six currently dominant codes of trust, and crucially, six emergent codes of trust.
Okay.
Now, the dominant codes of trust, you'll recognize from your experience in life accessing lots of different services.
Sure.
And there are some here which are very well owned in the banking space, whether that's the global banks, the regional banks, challenger banks, and arguably by credit unions as well. So
mm-hmm.
digital security, telling the truth, treating people well,
mm-hmm.
ethics and leadership,
mm-hmm.
service that works, and doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
You may see in that some very strong dominant codes of trust that credit unions absolutely can access.
Indeed.
What I think is very interesting and more differentiating for credit unions are some of the emerging codes of trust. Two-way transparency, local authenticity,
mm-hmm.
and agency in particular. Now, there are some others, and I won't go into those in great detail, but those are some that I think are really interesting
mm-hmm.
for credit unions.
Mm-hmm.
One, two-way transparency, being not only it being open with your customers,
mm-hmm.
but being seen to be open.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly younger cohorts,
mm-hmm.
the people you would like to attract to your membership,
mm-hmm.
expect two-way transparency. If there is any issue or concern, they don't want to be shuffled into a private space particularly online, because they wonder what you're hiding.
Oh, yeah.
So
there's
quite a lot in that two-way transparency piece.
Yeah, social media has really stemmed that, right?
Absolutely.
Facebook page or Instagram, whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah. And one of the quotes which really stood out was, "I trust social media and reviews more than I trust any company." And they trust their peers more than they trust
the peers, I can see, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that two-way transparency piece is a real opportunity for credit unions, naturally an honest bunch, but a very clear opportunity there for credit unions to attract that younger cohort, which they're so keen to do. Agency, incredibly important. Agency is the concept that in an uncertain world, any organization that can actually give me control over something is very much valued. So an organization that can do with that, that can do that and do that genuinely in a helpful manner, give me agency, control back over my life, a crucial aspect of my life, has a real advantage. And I think that that is authentic to the codes of what a credit union is. Local authenticity, I think, is a real opportunity for credit unions, particularly...
That's their wheelhouse.
That's absolutely the wheelhouse, because it is not this globalized corporate social responsibility, big statements, macho statements on the website. This is local employment, local making a difference on the ground, local volunteering, and so forth. It is the... as you describe it, the very wheelhouse of credit unions. And there is a very strong emerging codes in all cohorts, all age groups, all socioeconomic groups. And it is the pendulum swinging against those big global brands which seem to be so very distanced. So in a world where you see the tech titans and fintech companies seeking to serve the underserved, or in some cases the really unserved, there is a question for credit unions which is very open, which is how to leverage this very needed sense of local authenticity. So I would ask any credit union watching this today to understand those dominant codes of trust and to understand those emergent codes of trust. And if they are really keen to learn more, by all means contact me directly. I'm available on LinkedIn, anybody can find me. And I will share that research with them.
Yeah, that would be some valuable information for creators out there, especially the emergent stuff there. I mean, that would go many, many miles for them, for sure.
I hope so.
So what happens now? Where do we go from here with all this information, all this data? Because you can't swing a cat these days without talking about data.
Yeah.
You know, just maybe 5 years ago, data was like in the server room with the IT people and stuff. Now it's enterprise-wide. And now we're talking what's going on in Australia, you know, empowering the consumer with the data rights and stuff. What's next? What's in 2020 that we can maybe look forward to or even evolve into?
Yeah, so I think we've heard a lot about data, particularly the stuff about rights, access to that structured data, so the data I create through my behavior. Very important, critically important. Do not ignore its massively proliferating cousin, unstructured data, which is how you understand your customer, their data daisy, in context. So the unstructured data, the cultural weather, if you like, what you're saying about yourself as a credit union, what people are saying back to you in their customer conversations with you, in their customer satisfaction, you can now access and understand that unstructured data at pace and at scale. It's simply a question of being curious.
Indeed. And so how does a credit union grasp this? Because right now they're a lot of them are really proactive and forward thinking. They're into their digital transaction journeys, if you will, or transformation journeys right now, and they're learning how to handle all this data. I've heard that credit unions have more data on their members than Amazon has on their customers, because they see all the transactions that they can see. So but how do they handle this data and then better yet, leverage it to their advantage and even empower their members with it. Because it's still a new world for a lot of folks out there.
It absolutely is. And one of the advantages that I think credit unions have is a willingness to and an understanding of how to collaborate. I don't see too many fintechs really collaborating.
Got that right.
For their end members' value. I don't see too many banks collaborating for end users' value. So
right.
I think one of the advantages that I would like credit unions the world over to take advantage of is that ability to collaborate and to therefore create scale. So perhaps if you looked at data not just in your small or medium sized or even reasonably large credit union, but if you looked at it across your membership and you looked at the category of money in the round, and you looked at the cultural weather of today with an open mind, then you have a real advantage. But rather than trying to catch and structure data in order to understand it, you don't always have to do that. You can look at unstructured data in the wild and understand it at pace and at scale.
Okay.
My question for credit unions is to take advantage of new mechanisms for understanding data, but also to think about how they could pool not just data, but pool the understanding of that data, and to think as a movement rather than as individuals.
Yeah, now you're talking. Now you're talking the credit union language, because when we can all move together, I mean, the old adage that we're all more powerful than the individual. So together we are pretty powerful stuff. Good stuff. Oh my gosh, I could go on for another hour. Easily. I wish I would have attended your session. I'm so bummed I missed it. So
well, I can only tell you that I was fabulous.
I can already tell. Good stuff. Well, before I let you go, anything I always ask, anything else to add, any final words of wisdom on this topic that you can convey to the credit union audience out there?
I was asked a very interesting question in the audience by a chap who'd obviously been paying very close attention to when I was describing how Signoy, the company that did the research, had done what they'd done. And I'd obviously used the phrase artificial intelligence. And he asked me a very interesting question. He said, well, you know, how can you trust the algorithms? Because there's this fear, right? And I think a lot of that fear stems from artificial intelligence has had a very, very long history. It's been going on for decades. And the people who have owned it and kept it very much for themselves have tended to come from the data sciences, the computational sciences, the maths and the stats background. And what I think is interesting now is that if you can balance those skills and those capabilities and you can apply them to the human sciences, psychology, study of people, ethnography, study of culture, semiotics, my discipline, the study of how meaning is created, conveyed, received and understood, then you have something which is inherently balanced and comes from a long, diverse and understood background. Psychology is not seen as a dark art. Ethnography, the study of culture, is not seen as a dark art. Understanding meaning is seen as something that we all do on a daily basis. So if you can bring those things together, you have something which represents the thing that we talk about all the time, which is strength in diversity. And from that, I think we can derive confidence.
Good stuff, good stuff. I will never look at the term data daisy or data dandruff the same again.
I hope one of them makes you happy.
They both make me happy.
Thank you very
Louise,
much.
Thank you. That was so...